The following podcast is a presentation of Small Biz America.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
Our guest on this segment of the Small Biz Brain knows something about how to help organizations navigate the internal changes in leadership that they may need to make. Mark Wellstoney has created a set of unique, time-tested programs and systems to help guarantee companies a smooth transition, accelerate their positive ROI in their staffing decisions, and protect their investments in leadership talent, assuring a successful trajectory for them. Joining us on the line from Santa Fe, New Mexico, to share how he manages leadership change and much more is Mark Wellstoney. Good morning, Mark.
Good morning, David. Thanks for having me on the program.
Thanks for joining us. Now, you've spent the better part of, say, 25 years or so in executive management, designing leadership initiatives, developing leaders for companies like American Express, Ernst & Young, Computer Horizons, iGate Capital, and so forth. First off, how has your experience with these companies informed the work you're now doing?
Well, I think experience is the best teacher, David. I'm sure you found that the same way. And consistently over my career, I've seen a tremendous amount of effort finding the right person. And then that person coming in and essentially having to sink or swim during their first 90 days on the job. And it's during that first 90 days that really makes or breaks their ability to succeed and for the organization to get a positive return on their investment.
Why do you think, from your point of view, the installation of new leaders fails so often?
I think, to some extent, it's a little bit back to the days of King Arthur, in the sense that just putting the sword on someone's shoulder and saying, now you're a knight, now you're in a new role, just doesn't work. Because typically, in my experience, in the research that I've looked at and have, it's essentially the biggest reasons that people fail in a new role is going in assuming that what worked for them before will work again in this situation.
Mm.
Secondly, the fact that they are brought in and anointed in that sense, they tend to be poorly coachable, meaning that they think that they were hired, they were given a mandate, and now they just need to go ahead and do whatever needs to be done. And the third point is the term emotional intelligence, meaning to really understand the impact of your actions on others.
Yeah.
So when those three things are in play, that's the reason why 70% of new leadership changes fail.
How do you think top management might make it easier for the leaders that they install in their companies?
The number one reason, according to the research, that the companies can do more successfully is something that's so simple, yet can be difficult to remember, to implement, and to implement successfully. And that is basically giving someone a very clear expectations of what the requirements are within the first 90 days. In other words, just to go back to what I mentioned before, bringing someone in, sending out an organization announcement, and standing back really is not going to result in success. But in that first time period, in those first weeks, being able to clearly define what the expectations are, especially if they can be broken down into 30, 60, and 90 days. And part of the reason for that, David, is it's generally within that first 90 days that someone needs to get 2 to 3 critical wins. And when I say 2 to 3 critical wins, I would define those as small enough to win, but big enough to matter. Because when those critical wins happen in that 90-day period, then the person has the foundation and the credibility to move forward. So the number one thing an organization could do is be crystal clear about expectations and what those 2 to 3 critical wins could be in the first 90 days. The second piece of it really is to be able to get a first positive connection with their team, with their boss, and with those peers. And that very often means that the individual who's coming on board needs to understand the culture, what's valued. Who are the stakeholders? Who are the influencers? Who are the people who are going to support the new program? Who are the ones who are going to stay on the fence? And are there any resistors? Being able to help the person coming in get that type of information really translates to success.
I know you've spent a good amount of time around analyzing the real cost of leadership failure, and it might be a good point to sort of quantify some of this for organizations. If you don't mind, could we walk through some of that research and talk a little bit about the real cost?
Sure. Well, let's start with the financial cost, David. Experts estimate that the cost of leadership failure is about 40 times base salary. Now, that sounds like a lot, but let me talk a little bit about what some of those factors are. There's certainly the amount that's spent on recruiting fees, the amount that might be spent on outplacement fees. It's also the amount of time a position remains open, and some of the basic objectives of the organization aren't being met. And by that, I mean goals aren't achieved, products may not be rolled out, or most importantly, customer satisfaction may dip, and other employees may leave. They may say to themselves, you know, if the organization can't fill this job, it's certainly not going to be an opportunity for me to progress. So the financial costs take in all of those areas. On the personal costs, just losing time and having an executive fail just from a personal standpoint means that they essentially have to restart their job search, their career search, and that has a tremendous personal cost for themselves and their family. And I might mention, too, that when I talk about leadership failures, David, I'm really including also people who are already in the company and going into a new role. In those situations, you might have someone who is perfectly competent in one situation, and I suppose the stereotypical example is the best salesperson, who then gets promoted to be the sales manager. They go into the role. They use the same things that got them to be the best salesperson, which doesn't necessarily translate to being the best sales manager. And as a result, the organization also loses a best salesperson and has a sales manager position that's filled with someone who's not going to be effective.
Having said all that, it's easy to see how this might be a cost that's easily underestimated amidst the change in leadership.
I completely agree. And it's one of those situations, too, that really is so avoidable. For example, some of the research that I have talks about technical incompetence as a reason for failure.
Yeah.
Very rarely happens. It happens in 11% of the time, according to some studies. And the reason is that organizations focus on technical competence for that 11%, and what they miss are the much higher reasons, like lack of emotional intelligence or coachability,
yeah,
which includes 49% of the reason for failure.
We're visiting with Mark Walstoney. Effective Leadership Changes LLC is the company. The website, www.markwalstoney.com. And I'll spell that. It's www.mark, M-A-R-K, W-A-L-Z-T-O-N-I.com. Phone number 505-466-2695. Mark, you've developed some key principles that you use to help companies control some of these risks and costs that we've now identified relating to leadership failure. Mm-hmm. If you don't mind, let's walk through a few of those and get some insights about how you're helping companies get around all of this.
Certainly, David. And I think one of the first, I think about leadership changes, and this is someone coming in from the outside or going into a new role from already inside the organization in three phases. The first phase, which is generally the first 30 days, is assessment and alignment. And the assessment piece is personal assessment, meaning what are my strengths? What do I bring to the role? How am I perceived? How was I perceived in my last role? And to think about my last leadership transitions. And David, I'm sure in addition to you and I, your audience has all experienced starting in their first leadership role. And they've all experienced someone coming in a leadership role who is their boss, and they've seen what works and what doesn't. But very often, that's not reflected on, and those lessons learned aren't pulled out. So I tend to spend the first part looking at the organizational's history of leadership transitions. Are they working? Why do they typically fail? Why do they typically succeed? For the individual as well. If you're the salesperson who has been tremendously successful, your strength may be picking up the sales bag, going out, cold calling, and making things happen. Well, when the organization is facing a shortfall or introducing a new product, you don't want the sales manager to close the office door and make cold calls. It's a whole different skill set. So helping the person see what's ending, what was ending in the last role, what's required in the new role, and helping them on that, understand that transition.
Yeah.
The second piece is alignment. And alignment simply means understanding what the expectations are, not only of the boss, but of the peers, of your peers and the teams. Because in any organization today, it's that network of all those stakeholders that are going to make an opinion on whether or not someone's successful, and they're going to make it a judgment on how much support they're going to provide, or they're just going to stand back and let something happen. And generally, when people stand back and let something happen, what happens isn't very good.
Yeah.
The second piece is achieving results, and I mentioned that a little bit sooner, that notion of small enough to win, big enough to matter. The days of coming in, taking a six-month honeymoon period, seeing what's going on and introducing incremental change, it's just not the reality of business today. It's about coming in, making a positive impact, getting the support, and then building on that foundation. So assessment, alignment, getting those results. And then the third phase I call accelerating sustainability. Now, that's kind of a highfalutin phrase, but the real point there is that assuming you've made it through that critical win period, you understand how things work in the organization, you understand who the influencers are and how to influence them, then it's the point to carry forward. And again, I think one of the worst things someone can do is say, well, I made it over the hump. Now I can go into that honeymoon period. Now I can stand back.
Yeah.
And that is simply a recipe for failure. So in the accelerating sustainability phase, it's really about keeping positive momentum. And that's to take the measurements of what you've done so far. And I recommend using a quarterly scorecard for this method. What are the objectives I accomplished? What were my results? What were the results in numbers as much as I can quantify? That's my new baseline. So what's my baseline result? What do I want in the next 90 days? Then how am I going to do that? So it's a matter of incrementally taking that baseline, raising it to another level, and then doing the types of actions that are going to be necessary to make that happen. So those are really the three phases, David, that I feel that someone as an individual or as an organization can really get a lot of leverage.
Now, it sounds as I listen that many of these principles can be sort of scaled down to the entrepreneur, the solopreneur. Any insights about how these might transmute into ideas that can be used by someone who's dealing with a microorganization?
Mm-hmm. I think the thing that would be most critical for someone in a microorganization is to get the hiring specs right. In other words, there's no... And when I talk about phased approaches, and I'm a business owner myself, so I understand that from the business owner perspective, there aren't, having manuals and processes and that is just going to slow things down. I believe that the first place, and this is where, just like in a manufacturing organization, you don't have 20 inspectors at the back end of the line looking for scrap. You have one or two up front who are screening in quality. And screening in quality in this process is simply clearly defining what you need that person to do in that first 90-day period and communicating that. So it's less, again, looking for, well, gee, what are the technical skills I need, but what are the outcomes? How am I going to measure this person, and how am I going to communicate that? I think that's the greatest lever that a small business can do when they're hiring, because every hire is a big hire. Every hire is a critical hire. So get the expectations right up front. Interview to those expectations. Have those expectations in writing for the person before they start. Put it right in the offer letter. And then start with regular communications. The other piece is really have a simple plan for what's going to happen on day one. Now, you may send the person information, literature before that time, but on day one, you might want to have activities that include visiting 2 to 3 key customers, and this is all depending on the role, visiting 2 or 3 key customers, a planned introduction to the other members of the team, a planned, this is when we're going to follow up in this time period, and here's what I want you to do. So that structure up front is, I think, just critical to setting that frame. And I've also seen organizations, and I've worked for 10 years for founding entrepreneurs in the systems integration field, and these were people who bootstrapped their organizations up to the $300, $400 million level. And one of the things they told me is that they did two things that they wish they didn't do. Number one is they gave people too much time, meaning they brought them in and they didn't ask for results immediately and they waited too long. The second thing they said is, you know, I got overly impressed if the person came out of IBM Global Services. I was overly impressed if the person came out of a Big Ten school. And they said, at the end of the day, Mark, you know, it's really about the results and being clear up front, because keeping people too long, hiring the people of sort of the halo effect of what they might have done somewhere else just doesn't fit.
Yeah. Some great stuff, Mark. Thanks so much. Mark Wallstoney is our guest, Effective Leadership Changes, LLC, www.markwallstoney.com, MarkWallstoney, 505-466-2695. If you would, Mark, tell us how you typically work with companies and what forms do your services come in, or packages, so to speak?
Mm-hmm. A couple things, David. One is I work individually with people who are going into those new roles. And that would be more typical to just a coaching arrangement. I work with them on the assessment side, help them understand where the strengths are, where the things are that either they need to develop or work around organizationally to have someone else pick up. So I can work with them one-on-one. With businesses, I find that they get the most value from looking at the process as a whole. And by what I mean by that is, just in a very straightforward way, you know, let's define the expectations. Let's define the reporting period. Let's map out the network of people that this person will be dealing with. How much time do we think we need to have them spend with them? And then what's the outcome? You know, it's not enough just to go meet and greet, but what are we really looking for? And what's the type of behaviors that we want the person to demonstrate, and what types of feedback are we looking for from these stakeholders? And it's a technique popularized by a fellow named Marshall Goldsmith called Feedback Forward, where people describe, you know, in 30 days, I would consider this person a success if they've done X and X, or if the way we've worked together has looked like this and that. So from an individual perspective, coaching with executives in that first 90 days. The second piece with organizations, let's get the specs right. Let's get the process right. Let's align the expectations. Let's get the measures in place, and then let's monitor ourselves against those measures. So those two areas, I think, are where there's the greatest impact.
Great, Mark. Thanks for all. Mark Wallstoney has been our guest, Effective Leadership Changes, LLC. www.markwallstoney.com or at 505-466-2695. Mark, thanks for lending your insights to the Small Biz Brain this morning.
Thank you, David. It's been a pleasure.
Small Biz America.
The Brain.
This podcast is produced by Small Biz America. If you'd like to find out about hosting your own podcast, visit us at smallbizamerica.com.
Small Biz America.